Turn your tax refund into a new kitchen with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now. Save big money
at Menards. Hey, it's Cole Swindell. And when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back to Breaking Math. I'm your host, Gabriel Hesch, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Autumn Faneff. Today, we have the pleasure of hosting Jeff Perry, a distinguished career coach, host of the popular Engineering Career Coach podcast in partnership with the Engineering Management Institute, and author of the insightful book, The Intentional Engineer. Jeff's work is making waves in the engineering and tech communities, offering a fresh perspective on how professionals can shift from simply climbing the corporate ladder to cultivating a truly fulfilling, purpose-driven career. The Intentional Engineer isn't just another self-help book for engineers. It's a comprehensive guide that challenges you to rethink your approach to your career and your life. Jeff draws on years of coaching experience to provide practical frameworks and exercises designed to help engineers identify their core values, strengths, and passions. This is all about taking control of your career by being intentional in every step you take, moving from survival mode or a paycheck mentality to a life and career filled with meaning and impact. One of the key concepts Jeff introduces is finding your zone of genius, which he describes as an intersection of what we're naturally gifted at with what truly excites us. He also delves into the importance of building a strong professional network, not just as a means to climb the ladder, but as a way to create meaningful connections that support your long-term growth and satisfaction. Jeff's approach resonates particularly well with those who feel stuck or unfulfilled in their current roles. He addresses common feelings of disengagement and dissatisfaction that many engineers face, even when they appear to be thriving on the outside. His book challenges the conventional idea of work-life balance, suggesting instead a more integrated approach that aligns your career with your broader life goals. In our conversation today, we'll deep dive into these themes, exploring how you can apply Jeff's principles not only to achieve your professional success, but also live a life that's truly aligned with your values and aspirations. Whether you're an engineer at the start of your career, a seasoned professional, or somewhere in between, this episode promises to offer valuable insights that could transform your way, that could transform the way you think about your work and your life. So get ready to be inspired and equipped with actionable strategies to become an intentional engineer, creating a career and a life that you can be genuinely passionate about. All right. Here we have with us Jeff Perry, the author of The Intentional Engineer. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us. We're excited to have you here.
Yeah, this should be a fun conversation. I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So this book gave me a lot to think about. And I thought before we dive in, I want to just do a super quick preview for all of our listeners. This book will talk about the importance of being intentional, obviously, in understanding yourself, you know, your passions, your skills, whether it be in engineering or elsewhere. It also talks about the importance in things like building networks and things like this concept that you have, the way you phrase it, your genius zones. All of these, with the Breaking Math podcast, I was able to think back about all of the mathematicians and engineers who I studied and all of their personalities, and I'm reading about them, and I think a lot of them have genius zones, but also areas of growth. So for those of you who are listening, we thought we would season today's episode with examples from history of engineers who had both strengths and weaknesses and give you something to think about with your life as an engineer or in any other job if you're not an engineer. Can you tell us a little bit about your inspiration for this book?
Yeah, sure. And by the way, like, even though it's written to engineers, like, we'll include anyone who's on the fringes. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about mathematicians and all sorts of other folks here on the podcast, but and I've had even like accountants and all sorts of other things read the book, and they love it. So The quick story is, in the work that I do, I do a lot of coaching, training specifically for people in engineering and tech to help them upgrade their careers and their leadership in different things. And as I'm a coach, I get coaching and I get mentors as well. And I had a few mentors who are like, hey, when are you going to write that first book? And I'm like, hemmed and hawed and anything. And did that for quite a while. Eventually I had a conversation and just kind of the energy was there. Like, you know what? I think I'm going to do it. And I had an event that I was going to be speaking at a few months later. And I said, how cool would that be to have my book there when I get there? So I had a forcing, what I call a forcing function that said, hey, I have a deadline I got to reach and get to. And so even though I'd been writing blogs and articles on all these topics for years, then the book came together from, hey, I'm going to commit to doing it, to it's published and holding it in my hand in about 3 months, which was kind of crazy. But all around this theme of being intentional to help people say, hey, what do you want? Why do you want it? And let's go figure out how to make that happen in alignment with your career and the life that you're trying to live as well.
Nice, nice. As I read this, I was talking to Autumn about some of the target audiences, and oh my gosh, I would have thought that I definitely would have been a target audience of this at certain points in my life, the points of biggest uncertainty. It's not that I didn't have the question asked of me, like, what do you want to do? It's, well, how do you know what you want to do? And how are you supposed to figure out if you don't know what you don't know about yourself? Can you walk us through how you went from being an engineer to being an engineer coach?
Well, it was one of those periods of uncertainty, which can be quite unnerving for a lot of us. In fact, I include a quote in the book about uncertainty. It's one of my favorites, from a psychologist by the name of Virginia Satir, who says that many people prefer the certainty of misery to the misery of uncertainty.
Yes. Right?
And I had a moment in my career that I was in that space where I'd been an engineer for a number of years, even went into engineering leadership, and was loving a lot of that. And then had the opportunity. At the time, I was in kind of a small mid-sized company, and we acquired another small company, and then we rebranded to kind of do the unified company. We went through kind of like an identity crisis, right? Mm-hmm. And we're revisiting corporate values and structure and systems, and all the things were kind of up in the air. And so we brought in some consultants that did like a mindset training for the leadership group that I was a part of. And that was transformative for me in a number of areas, in terms of like me being aware of just how much I was influencing other people with the way that I showed up, and my mindset that I brought to work. And so I raised my hand and said, hey, if this is going to be a thing and we're going to do more of this, I'd love to do that. So I actually did kind of a train the trainer thing, and I got to take that same training to the whole rest of the company, which was super fun. And I found that I looked forward to those days. It was kind of a side project on top of my engineering leadership work, but I looked forward to those days that I got to do those trainings, and I got to do kind of custom workshops, and I did some internal coaching and stuff. I looked forward to that more than anything else I was doing on the technical side, because we were working with changing and developing the people and seeing people change and grow and develop. And I just loved that. And so was looking for, say, figuring out like, hey, what's next in my career? And there was a organizational shakeup and things. And I was like, this isn't going to be a great fit for me. And so made the jump to say, hey, I'm going to do this on my own. There's a lot more to that. But basically, I say I went from, as an engineer, largely building products and processes, to now my focus is building people. And I love doing that.
I think that that's actually wonderful to do, especially when you're growing as a person, you're growing as an engineer. And sometimes when you're building systems and processes over time, you see that natural like evolution in yourself. And when you have that fulfillment, it helps the team. It helps the community. You know, you've been through those places, and just seeing that makes the difference, especially for you starting at ground zero all the way to where you are now. So out of curiosity, you talk about taking stock of where you're at. How do you map out that natural progression if you're feeling stuck as an engineer, as a scientist? Because I know that when I was a grad student coming out of grad school, or even after each new job or contract, sometimes people feel stuck and unsure of the next steps. What's the best way to just plan forward?
Yeah, so I mean, a big part of that is saying like, hey, where am I at right now? Because a lot of times we're so focused on what we wish we had right now Like, yep. we're kind of looking forward in a way that we are just focusing on what we're lacking at the moment compared to where we're at right now. And that usually keeps us in the stuck mode. So just, it's more about accepting the current reality in terms of saying, hey, something changed, whether I got let go or this project ended, or I'm recognize that where I'm at right now isn't great, whether I need to make some sort of change internally or externally, all the different ways and flavors that that can look in the moment. Just accept that. Kind of goes almost like that serenity prayer that's a lot of times talked about in like a 12-step or addiction recovery process of like, let's accept the things that we cannot change and have courage to change the things we can. And that's more looking forward to say, hey, what can I do to make this change and design forward? So I like to think about the process that in the engineering world, a lot of times we are designing prototypes, we're running experiments and all sorts of things, right? We're trying to collect data. And so sometimes the process of looking forward where that can feel so daunting, and almost some people get into analysis paralysis about maybe all the different things that they could do. Sometimes we can diminish some of that stress and just say, hey, let's just design a prototype. Let's just run an experiment. And the decision that I make doesn't need to be feel like this big permanent thing forever. It's just, and we can do something small that can be as simple as conversations with people who are in industries or roles or things that you might consider. This can be running some sort of side project. If you're looking to change something internally, maybe you can raise your hand, kind of like I did years ago with the training thing, and say, hey, I'd love to try this, right? Or run a different type of project. Or maybe you want to try out leadership. Can you, you know, mentor a few interns or something first, something like that, right? All sorts of things that you can do to try things in a small way before you take a big leap to collect that data, run the experiment and say, hey, does this work? Did I like it? What did I like about it? Did I not? What are the elements? What would I do differently next time? And then iterate forward. Our careers, our lives are continuous iterative processes we're continuing to do. And yeah, we need to accept where we're at now, but iterate forward and just think of it as small experiments or prototypes. And if it works out, great. If it doesn't, okay, it's not forever. You can make a pivot again. You can run another experiment. It's fine.
Nice, nice. Now, hearing what you said, you mentioned data collection. And when I think back to my engineering degree, there's something that a lot of us struggle with, and that is, what's the term we were talking about, Autumn? When you have an engineering degree, but you have so much self-doubt, it's imposter syndrome. Yes. I mean, this has been talked about for years on end, but it's just, I don't know. I feel like I learned so much from so many people that like I felt overwhelmed. When I was in college, before I had my degree, I actually took a day and I spoke with the career counselors. And speaking of collecting data, I actually sat down and said, okay, let's pretend that you have an engineering degree, but you suck at math and they're going to find out you're an imposter. What are all your other options? And she sat there and just stared at me for a bit. And then she says, I can't even name to you how many we have. And she put all of these options in front of me, you know, things like you could go into medical sales, where if you're selling medical equipment, but you need to speak with some technical proficiency, or you can go into engineering sales where you're customer facing, you're talking to people and you don't have to be building the product, but you have to communicate clearly and confidently. You seem like a people person. All that to say with data collection, when you're at a point where you're really unsure about yourself, that gave me peace of mind to calm down to say, okay. Number one, I at least have the confidence where I can try out this engineering thing, which turned out to be great, by the way. I love engineering. But number two, if I fall on my face and I feel like I'm incompetent, you know what I mean? I just thought, like, what options do you have? It is not hopeless. Even if you failed that class, even if it's not going to work out to be an engineer or whatever, you have so many options.
And you use the resource that were available to you, you know, the people that knew, the guidance counselors and the others, and you got exposure to possibilities. That's the thing I find with so many students. They just don't know. There's so much about the ways that they can utilize their skills, their degree and other things, but they don't know the many options that they have. They're like, okay, I'm this kind of engineer. This is what that looks like. They're so versatile in ways that they can go, that just finding ways to get that exposure as early and often as possible is critical.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you do any networking with like, oh, I don't know, recruitment pipelines or...
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
Or even like visiting schools so you can help kids figure out who they are and where their best fit is in industry.
I think I have one question that goes along with that. It's, sure. How do you know if you're starting from ground zero without a coach, without a network, and say everything goes belly up? Where do you start and how do you get to that next step?
So are you talking about at the very beginning or something has just gone belly up?
You could say something just went belly up and you lost your whole network.
Okay,
like what, great. Like where do you have, when you have no resources, what are the first things to think about and where to turn to?
Well, first of all, where you're saying like, how do you know, right? Like, and this isn't all that comforting, but you don't know. Okay.
You never
you
do.
You don't know what's going to work out. And that's the reality of choices that we make in life. That's the choices we make with things that we design as engineers and scientists and all sorts of things. We don't know how something's going to play out. There's no magic eight ball or crystal ball or something that's going to tell us. Like, we can't. And so we have to actually embrace the uncertainty, which is difficult. There's a lot of fear with that, but we actually have to embrace it. And you said, like, you have no support. I'd also push back on that a little bit. You have more than you think, right?
Naturally.
We're built in. There's always more resources than you think. And so if we're talking about something went belly up and like you lost a job or something like that, you feel like, okay, now what do I do? Crowdsource your job search. You have friends, family, neighbors, former classmates, former coworkers, whoever you know in every facet of life that you've ever been in, reach out to them, reconnect, reestablish relationships, yep. And just let people know. Share it on social media. For some people, there's like a lot of shame in that, but there absolutely shouldn't be. Because there's a whole point of having relationships and connections is to help each other. And
definitely.
I mean, one thing I've done with people who are out of a job, and they're like, oh, that feels so like icky almost to like reach out to someone who I haven't talked to in a few years. And it feels like I'm just using them to get a job, even though they're in this cool place that I would enjoy working. And I say, well, let's reframe this just a little bit. Like, how would you feel if that person reached out to you? And it'd be like, oh, I'd be totally excited. I would love for them to reach out. I'd love to reconnect with them. Okay, well, then they probably feel the same way, right? And I did this with one guy and he was out of a job. He'd worked at Amazon for like 7 years and he was looking for his next deal, his next gig. And he reached out to this guy at Walmart and who doing some similar stuff. And within a couple of days, he had an interview and then he had a job offer, right? Like that, this sort of
That's
stuff
the
happens.
Easiest
it's not
part.
Always that easy, right? But sometimes it is. And so just recognize you have more resources than you think. And then the other thing is when we're talking about networks and resources and stuff, like, okay, if there's a resource or a network that you don't have, how can you take the action to get it, right? Whether that's getting a coach or a mentor or something like that, or whether that's reaching out to someone in companies that you don't know yet and trying to build some new relationships. You know, sometimes you have to start from scratch.
And you're talking about networks here. When we first made the Breaking Math podcast, my co-host at the time, Sophia Baca, made some beautiful, wonderful cards that had some really cool math symbols on them. And it said Breaking Math and just talked about, you know, we were doing an episode on the history of computers, which is from the abacus to the iPhone. And I thought the cards were gorgeous. And I went to, at the time, I was still an engineering grad student, and I went to the receptionist of the engineering of the computer and electrical, sorry, the electrical and computer engineering building. I just went to the receptionist and I said, "Hey, check out what me and my co-host made. We're students here and we're doing this little podcast thing." And she said, "Oh, can I see that?" And she looked at it and said, "Wow, this is beautiful. You know, I'd love to hang on to this card if I can." And I said, "Yeah, sure. Tell your friends all about it. We're going to do a podcast on the history of all this computer stuff." And then we get a contact a couple weeks later from the communications department at the University of New Mexico. Well, it literally turned out that the secretary that I was sharing that cool card with goes out to lunch with the entire communications department secretaries. It's like a big secretaries group. And they said, "Oh, wow, you actually have students that want to talk about the graduate work that they're doing in math. They want to talk about it. They want to make it accessible for the layman." So then they actually brought us into their studio and they interviewed us for like an hour. And they did an entire news story with a big article. You can find it right now. If you type University of New Mexico Breaking Math, you can see the original article. But they published that article on the front page of the University of New Mexico's website for like a month. Can you believe that? So that was just from a single conversation I had. I was excited about it. That was one factor. The second factor is I did have the card. I've seen cards that are, you know, busy. This card was gorgeous. I happened to have a good conversation and a good card. That's what I'm crediting this to. And then the stars all aligned. And yeah, it's not going to happen all the time. But you know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff helps. That kind of stuff helps. And then I didn't have a business card this last time. My wife and I went to Red River, New Mexico, and we were talking to a guy in a shop that works there part-time. And somehow I was talking about science, and then he got talking about his real job, which is he's obsessed with soil science. And he's like, "You'd have no idea. There's all these climate change. There's these easy solutions in climate change for adaptive soil if people just knew the soil science, but it's not appreciated." And then, like, yeah. I didn't make that connection, but I didn't have my cards with me. But I was like, I want to hear more about this. All
you
this to say,
carry one in your wallet.
I know. I should. Yeah. So I'm only saying this because this is supposed to be an example of where something worked out and a conversation led to something, and it's what you're passionate about plus a card. You know how it works. This is not brains. This is not rocket surgery here.
Yeah, brain rocket surgery. Now I want to see how pretty. Now I want to see the pretty cards if you have any. I want to see how pretty they are.
Oh,
we're talking
yeah.
about how gorgeous they are. Now I want to see them.
See, I'd love to. We have updated ones that I did. I don't know what the original ones look like, so I'm just curious.
I will show them to you. Let me pull them up. I was hoping, tell you what, I'm going to let you take the next couple of questions. I know there's a bunch here about like the zones of competency and all that stuff. Let me see if I can pull up the card. I'll see if I can do it. Mm-hmm. Give me a second. Cool.
This is why we have two hosts. Sometimes it pays off.
Yeah, no, totally.
And we can edit.
Okay,
yeah, so, absolutely. So out of curiosity, you talk about unlocking your genius zones.
Uh-huh.
Tell us a little bit about that, because I'm not exactly as familiar of what that is. I know what it is, but I think people might be interested in it.
Yeah. So genius zones are super fun. And it's not saying like, hey, you have to be like an Einstein to be a physicist, right? That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the individual differences and things that make us special, just like our moms always told us or something like that, right?
Right.
But really, like all of us have genius inside of us that we don't recognize. And so here's a couple ways to think about it. So one way to think about it is connect it with the concept of flow, which comes from the author and researcher, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. He passed away a couple years ago.
Yep.
And he's got TED Talks and stuff that people can go check out. But the concept of flow is this concept of like when the challenge that you're facing and your skills and abilities to rise to that challenge match up, then you are in the zone of flow. And when you get in a state of flow, there's a high level of satisfaction and joy that comes from that, but also it's where you deliver a unique and high level of impact. So you're doing your best work or you're just enjoying it for the sake of it. And that's fantastic. We often think about this in terms of like athletes or something, like they talk about like the game slows down, or like a musician or something where they're just in this state of like creation and connectedness with the instrument, or maybe they're with other people and stuff like that. Those are easy examples, but we can do that in a design context or a collaborative context. For some people, they are an absolute genius in how they facilitate meetings and conversations with people. They can read the energy in the room and they can pull out insights from people that might normally be stepping back and not talking, right? Some people are just masterful at these sorts of things. And it's beautiful to watch. They're in their unique contribution. So thinking about backing up, like, hey, when have I been in that state of flow in a career or work context and outside of it? Say, how can I do that more? And then also, I love three categories that we can also look at, saying, hey, what are my unique experiences that I've had? What are my learned skills and also my maybe natural or innate talents that I just grew and gravitated towards naturally, right? And if you can look at those kind of three categories, natural talents, learned skills, and just experiences that you've had over your life, and how did those things influence you? Sometimes there are combinations, almost like a Venn diagram, to say, hey, when I look at those intersections, that gives me a clue to something that makes me different, right? So, for example, absolutely, an easy one for me is experience in engineering leadership. I had a broad engineering background, but I love the training and the mindset stuff. And I did some other training on like emotional intelligence and coaching that combines to do coaching and training for engineers in a unique way that most people won't do, right? And so right, that is me acting in one of my genius zones. And so that's a really straightforward one, but looking for all of us saying, hey, how do these things, and recognize they develop and grow as we have more experiences, we learn new stuff. And so we can say, hey, what are my genius zones now? And maybe what's a genius zone that I want to have? And can I get skills and experiences to help me do that?
I liked also though, how you don't only have genius zones, because then I think, I don't want to enforce a false binary, but like there's an entire spectrum of genius zones, and you approach it here. You say, so mm-hmm. there's the zone of incompetence, and then there's mm-hmm. the zone of competence, the zone of excellence. And I think these are worth going through because, you know, as we talk about engineers from the past, I love talking, frankly, I don't mean to sound like a gossip here, but I like to talk about the incompetence zones of some brilliant minds, because it just shows that we're all made a little differently mm-hmm. and there's ways that we can help each other out. So how would you describe, let's start off with, the zone of incompetence?
Yeah. So this is just something that, frankly, you're not good at, right?
Yeah.
And, yeah. And that you really don't enjoy, which means mm-hmm. that you're probably not going to put in the time and the effort to get good at and to mm-hmm. get competent, right? And so if you're really in that kind of state with something, then that's great. I would say that I am still probably incompetent in terms of like most art skills, mm-hmm. right? If I'm putting my growth mindset hat, I can say, hey, I can put in some work and effort to get better at that, but that's mm-hmm. not something I've ever had a passion for mm-hmm. in terms of that sort of creation. And so, like, I'm still pretty incompetent. My kids draw better stick figures than I do right now.
Now, you mentioned something that I thought was interesting for a zone of incompetence, because that's an area that you're not good at and perhaps you're not even passionate to get better at. It's interesting because my zone of incompetence, my entire family, the men cannot sing at all. But it's number one, that wouldn't be my zone of incompetence. I'm definitely incompetent, but I love to. And I'm going to tell you something that's really kind of funny. My wife and I, of course, we have many, many kids. We decided that we want to, when we're upset with them, we don't want to just, you know, like yell. So anytime I'm tempted to raise my voice in anger, instead, I sing instead of yelling. I have gotten from horrible to not very good. That is a huge leap for me. That is a huge leap for me. And I'm very excited. Like, my tonal quality is improved. And even my pitch, I can hit a couple of notes, which I'm very happy with. So, yeah.
Now, now I think we need a demonstration on the podcast.
Okay. Right? My goodness. No,
let's spare the listeners.
Okay. Yeah, I will. I'll spare them. But I've been working on the song Through Glass by Corey Taylor and what's the band? Stone Sour, I believe. It's one of my wife's favorites. So I wanted to learn that one. Maybe I'll surprise her one of these days. But it's a good song. Nice. It's a good song. Anyways. Now.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
Again, there's a lot of areas. Like, you may have a zone of incompetence, but then you've got your zone of competence, and this is something that we all run into. How would you describe your zone of competence?
Yes, this is something that you can do, you can accomplish. It's fine. You can do it about like anyone else can. And this is something that, like, you know, smart people like engineers, mathematicians, scientists, they can have a whole long list of things that are in their zone of competence, right?
Yeah.
Like, are smart, capable people that can do a whole lot of things, right? And that's great, but it's recognizing, like, hey, is there anything uniquely that I do in this space? I mean, sometimes it's totally fine to live there and check some things off the list in that realm, but it's not where you want to play because it's not really where you're enjoying much or you're challenged in a big way.
Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah, that brings you to your zone of excellence, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So zone of excellence is something that you do significantly differently and better than most people. So in an engineering or math science space, like maybe there's a particular type of analysis or math or specialty within your discipline or something that, like, you are just whether that's through your time and effort and maybe just some of your natural competencies that you've become really good at. And that's fantastic, but it's not quite there. So sometimes then those zone of excellences can develop to a genius zone, or it's taking multiple excellent zones and combining them. It's the combination, like we were talking about earlier, that makes it a genius zone. Because, yeah, there's probably still plenty of people who are also excellent and doing this particular type of analysis. But when you layer that on with something else that you have and your ability to interpret that or merge that with certain types of data that you do that uniquely, then it becomes something more in a genius zone.
Yeah, yeah. Nice, nice. Now, I'll say that back when I was really struggling with imposter syndrome, I was just crossing my fingers to hope to make it into the competent zone. I was just making sure I could at least do the job. I actually enjoy what I do. I love it. It's a lot of fun and I really enjoy it. So I look forward to honing in on those skills. Now, I bring these up because I said earlier we were going to do this. I said that we were going to talk about engineers and where they were specifically incompetent in. And the first example I thought of is from Charles Babbage, the creator of the difference engine. If you can imagine a steam power, I don't even know, steam powered or it was crank powered or a combination of both. This was a design for a computer in 17th century Great Britain at the height of their naval prowess. And you had all these ships that were being built and you had all these calculations that had to be done again and again and again. And Charles Babbage, you know, he was among them and he was like, oh, this is just, this work is so tedious. If there was only a way I could automate this, you know, this was back in the day where you had like a room full of computers. I'm not referring to the machines. I'm referring to the people, most often women in those times. But all they would do is trigonometry tables all day. And he just thought, if I could only automate this process, it would save so much energy, time, and boredom. And he wrote up all these designs. And as I understand it from the story, it's kind of hard to go to, you know, a British naval officer and say, hey, I need all these millions of dollars, or at the time, I don't know what the conversion would be. I need all this money because I'm going to do a machine that's going to be awesome. It's going to do math. And he's like, what? You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to blow anything up. It's not going to give us, you know, no, you understand. It's going to build ships better. Anyways, you don't have to argue hard nowadays that mathematics and engineering is cornerstone in military supremacy. All this to say, he was able to convince somebody to invest in him and his designs. And he got all the money, like, he got a lot of money and a lot of folks working for him, a lot of craftsmen to build his designs for difference engines. And again, if you look at the design, I saw one made out of Legos. That was a guy from an engineer for Apple he's the guy that did the search finder on some of the old operating systems in Apple. He designed a Babbage difference engine out of Legos, and it's just a thing you crank and you can do subtraction just with like Legos. It's awesome. Okay, all this to say, he never finished Charles Babbage never, ever finished. What happened, there were two things. First of all, he would start on a design and suddenly stop everything and say, oh, I've got a better idea. He'd scrap those plans, then he'd do a different design, which would make a lot of the previous work redundant. This led to difficulties with the craftsmen that he hired. They would have conflicting instructions and work that he discarded that no longer felt like he needed it, and he sometimes would forget to pay for it, even though he ordered it. So he had a genius zone in envisioning, you know, this new device that will do our calculations, our thinking for us, at least in terms of, you know, a difference between two sums here. But he didn't know how to carry a project to completion, and he didn't realize the value in paying for work that was done, even if he wasn't going to do the work. So, you know, it's hard to do reverse forensics here. But in the end, he never built his difference engine in a way that it was able to be used by the military. You want to know how much he wasted? He had the equivalent of over 20 modern day locomotive engines worth of scrap metal sitting in a yard that he never ended up using. So I only bring this up because you know, people will have a genius zone and then an incompetence zone, and it helps if we are aware that we are not the master of everything, even though we may feel otherwise. Yeah. So,
yeah. And recognizing, like, for him, a genius zone project manager would have been excellent to keep things flowing and say, how do we finish? How do we get all this stuff? You know, that sort of role. And so recognizing that in terms of engineers aren't just individuals in a box doing their thing. We have to collaborate. We have to work with people. So identifying and recognizing the genius zones of others allows us to utilize our best traits and mitigate the ones that we may have on the incompetence scale and say, hey, someone else can take care of that in a much better way than I can. Mm-hmm. And that's actually going to be a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. So
I think that piggybacks kind of right on the topic of when we're needing to build some additional skills, whether it's accountability or feedback or conflict management to support our intentions and goals, what are some strategies on how to navigate that and how to seek that help?
Yeah, so perfect. So chapter 8 in the book is all about, like, how do we build these skills that support our intentions, right? So we have all these intentions, these things that we want to go towards, the way that we want to build our career. We're getting some clarity. We're unlocking the genius zones. We haven't even talked about mindsets yet that much, but that's a huge piece of it. But how do we also work with people, communicate effectively, bring people into our sphere to help us hold accountable, accept and give feedback, and deal with some of those things to say, hey, like, we don't, again, our intentions and what we're trying to become is really what it's all about, aren't just an individual affair. It's a team sport, right? Life is a team sport, right? And so we need to be able to work with people. And so give you a couple examples here. So, like, accountability, huge driver for accomplishing things and getting things done and following through. For example, in my own life, I am inherently sometimes physically lazy, and I have a sweet tooth, which isn't great in terms of some of my health goals that I have. I have another friend who has been through kind of a health transformation. He's kind of a health nut. And so we started doing, like, these accountability contracts. So almost every single week, I text him and say, hey, here's my intentions for the week in terms of, like, how I'm going to eat and exercise, and I'm going to do, like, this many sets of push-ups every day and different things like that. And if I don't do that, then I owe you $10, right? Not a huge sum of money, but just annoying enough that sometimes I get to the end of the day, I'm like, crap, I haven't done this last set of push-ups. I got to do that before I get into bed. And I do it because I don't want to pay him. And I've only had to pay him a few times, which is cool. But it's just that little bit of an itch in terms of accountability and following through, because he expects me to do it. And there's science behind this. There's data behind this that says, like, hey, if you are accountable, you have a date to report back to someone, like, instead of just it being an idea in your head, which maybe is like a 10% chance you'll follow through, you can go up to like 65 or 95% chance if you have that accountability partner that you're that you have committed to with a date to follow up, right? Huge driver for actually following through on things. So that's huge. We have to be able to give and receive feedback. We'll especially say be open to feedback and not take it personally, but take it as a win and an opportunity to learn and grow. And you know, we could get into all sorts of more stuff, but it's really about like just being well-rounded, right? You're not going to be a genius at everything, but being more well-rounded to say, hey, it's not just like the core math or science or engineering that you need to be excellent to have a successful career. You need to be able to do that in the context of other people, right?
Yes,
and do that effectively. Because if you can't communicate why your great idea is fantastic, then it's not going to go anywhere, mm-hmm. right? And so you have to be able to have these other skills so that you can actually have the great engineering or technical impact that you might want to have.
Yeah, you had mentioned about us not getting into mindset, and I want to apologize if we jumped too far into the other sections of the book so far. I absolutely would like to get into mindset. You also, there was something else that I wanted to share as well. I have a colleague of mine who grew up in my town, and he got married at a very young age. I think he was 18 when he was married, which isn't that common where I'm from. But when he married, his wife wanted nothing more than to be a homemaker. That was her desire, her dream, and that was fine. She was extremely talented at mathematics and really smart. And what was interesting is they went to their to my friend's older brother's graduation. He got his degree in chemical engineering at the New Mexico Institute of Technology and Mining. And when he did his presentation of his project, I wish I could tell you what the project was, but just seeing what he built with his hands lit a fire under my friend's wife. And she enrolled in school in the next semester. And I want to say she graduated with a degree in chemical engineering as well. I only share that story because going along with the whole, you don't know what you don't know, and you don't know where your passions meet your talents. It took that catalyst to expand her own mind from seeing it as a possibility that in addition to being a homemaker, you could also be a chemical engineer, anything else. So I don't know. I kind of put a peg in that story where like I have this dream that maybe we'll talk about some specific engineering projects that inspire some curiosity from somebody and they'll discover the next great thing in some aspect. That's just gathering data about you don't know what you don't know. I hope you don't mind that tangent. I thought it was a worthwhile discussion.
That's great.
I would love to hear more about mindset and how you describe mindset.
Yeah, so mindsets are critical. In fact, when I was writing the book, I had it all in one chapter, and my editor was like, "This is so much. This is over mm-hmm. twice as much as all your other chapters. Can we make this two chapters, please?" Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, great. So it's like the cool. core center of the book, and there's two chapters on it. Let me put it simply: our mindsets drive our behavior. Mm-hmm. And our behavior drives our results, right? Okay. So mindsets are foundational to everything that we do, and what we do determines like the outcomes that we get, right? And so, but to simplify, maybe a couple analogies, metaphors, I always get them mixed up, but ways to think about mindsets. So Gabriel, you're wearing corrective lenses, you're wearing glasses, mm-hmm. right? So yes. One way I like to think about it is lenses through which we see the world. And if you mm-hmm. have the wrong prescriptions for your glasses, you're going to see a distorted view. You're not going to see real reality. Something that you think is a tree is actually going to be Bigfoot or something like that. Or you're going to see one kid that you have in your house and you're going to think it's someone else, right? You're going to see a distorted view. So our mindsets, we're trying to see reality. When we have more correct, positive mindsets, we're going to see things in reality instead of see things in a distorted way. Another way to think about that is maybe in terms of like an operating system, right?
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
So if we have a bug in the system, then we can even have, you think about like, you know, inputs and outputs, but it goes through the operating system. You might even have the right inputs, but if you have a bug in the system, you might have the wrong output, right? Because your mindset distorted or changed or threw the bug in there. And so someone comes and says something, we have the wrong mindset towards them, and we're going to react all defensively or negatively. And that's going to hurt that relationship, even though there was nothing wrong that actually happened, or certainly nothing and turned into nothing helpful that we did, right? So our mindsets is our orientation, our lenses, the way that we see people, challenges, and opportunities in our lives, and it influences what we do and how we do it, how we show up in every form and fashion. And it's a lifetime pursuit to move through the process of gaining greater awareness around where our mindset's at, and which we can also think about like our internal beliefs about ourselves and other people and how they show up. That's a lifetime process to gain awareness and also shift them. But one of the ways that we can do that is kind of like we were talking about in terms of like making career decisions and getting some clarity. We can also run like mindset experiments, right? And so it's kind of a fun way to think about like, hey, how do I run the scientific method? Let's expose something that might be an internally held mindset or belief that right now I recognize is not actually helping me. And here's an easy example that I've worked with a lot of people who are in kind of a leadership position where they struggle in terms of delegating work to their team, right? Because they have a mindset or belief that if I don't do it, it won't get done right, right? And they're committed yes. to, which is a good thing, high quality work, right? That's a good commitment, right? Mm. But they have a belief that if they don't do it or they don't micromanage or control that, then it's not going to be done well. And so then you can run an experiment and say, okay, let me find an opportunity where I normally would hold back and mindfully take an action that would be against my normal inclinations to say, hey, let me identify a project or something or a task that I'm going to delegate and do that in a way that you're not setting the other person up for failure. You're doing that a way to set them up for success as much as possible and say, hey, how did this go? Right? So again, you're running, you have a hypothesis, which is kind of this internal belief or assumption. And we're actually running an experiment to see if that's not true. So if we collect the data, we run that and we say, oh, that's actually not true. That puts a chink in the armor of this thing that we've been hanging on to for so long. And so then we don't believe it as much. So then we don't need to lean on. Anyway, that's a process that can continue. But that's just one way to go about that. And there's a lot more to that process. But thinking about if we change our beliefs, our mindsets, or Stephen Covey of the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People might call it a paradigm. If we can shift yes. our paradigms, then the way that we see the world and other people changes, and we can show up maybe more free, maybe more aware, and more focused to do the things that actually matter in a really big way. So it's foundational, because all too often, when we're trying to make some sort of change in life, we just prescribe, here's all the things I need to do differently. Well, I would say, let's dig in a little deeper and say, how do we need to be differently? What do we need to believe differently? What are the mindsets that actually need to change things more fundamentally, both individually and collectively, if we're talking about a team or organization, so that we can make whatever that change is more sustainably?
The mindset conversation is a fascinating one. I've had multiple folks who I've spoken to who really struggle with self-identifying their own weaknesses or their own blind spots. I have a strange example that I could bring up here. A colleague of mine, his father is a renowned engineer and mathematician at some labs that we have here in town. He is the guy if you have a really hard problem in computer science. He knows everything. And when you talk with him, he is very disheveled and very difficult to talk to. And I think there was a single instance when he was like almost 50 years old where he was invited to a really high class, like a high-end wedding that had a required dress code. And he's not used to all this because he's like, I can't be bothered with all that stuff. And like his hair is disheveled. He's got coffee stains on his shirt. And he's like, those people who are focused on all that stuff, like you're not thinking about the important things. And that was his paradigm. That was his view. Like I've got all these, you know, abstract ideas here. When he was forced to go to this outfitter where they got him completely outfitted and like combed his hair and stuff, he looked at himself and he was like, I've never felt so confident just in an outfit. I wish I knew what this experience was like. He was almost 50. And again, you know, his paradigm shift, he doesn't realize that we as humans take a snapshot of people, and like when you're dressed to the nines and you feel really good about how you're dressed, he'd never experienced that. You know what I mean? And again, I'm not trying to do like some kind of a motivational speech, or maybe I am, who knows? But the point I'm trying to make is that people can suffer for a long time where you're too reliant on your strengths and you don't take into account your relationship to other people and communication strategies and underlying assumptions, both you assuming about other people and what they assume about you. Oh my God, you're limiting the quality of the life that you could be living just on what you don't know. It's for that reason that how do you convince somebody that is so smart that they think they know it all already? How do you convince them that they've got room to grow?
Yeah, that's a tough one. And I imagine with that story, not only did he have that experience where he got all dressed up and he felt confident, he also probably had some conversations and interactions with people that helped him recognize that, hey, there is a time and a place for these sorts of things because some of these people are providing the funding and the experience that will allow me to then be work in my genius zone, right? And yeah. And if he can communicate that well, then that will actually enable him to then work in his state and deliver some of the unique impact that he can do so fantastically. Right. Mm-hmm. And normally he would say that's the only thing that matters. Well, in some cases, having funding and research and some of that stuff absolutely does matter. Otherwise, the research doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it kind of goes back to providing those opportunities for exposure to invite that open mindset. In terms of mindsets, you can't force any mindset on someone else, and no one can force a mindset on you. But we would say that mindsets can be invited. And so the mindset that we take towards other people will invite a particular mindset in someone else. So it influences that. And vice versa. If we're in an environment, the mindsets of the people that we're around will invite that in us. We don't have to accept that invitation, right? But it's more likely that we will align it with kind of the mindsets and the paradigms of other people, right? Go ahead, Autumn, you got something.
So one thing that I've noticed, this was actually something that was just popped up on tech Twitter last night. I have a large network, a little behind the scenes for you for context. I have a large network of women who are CEOs, executives, engineers. And it was talked about, especially for mindset. You know, you change the belief, you have a change in assumption, so that changes your mindset. As a career coach, from your perspective with this, women who are executives are thrown into harder jobs, especially as a CEO, coming in at a point of inflection. Is it just mindset? Or are there other factors that come into play with women in tech jobs, especially when they're siloed? You have to navigate all these other factors that, you know, you're balancing parenting, sometimes those responsibilities, I know both of you are dads with multiple kids. How do you change that narrative, especially for somebody who wants to go into that leadership position and they're at that point of inflection? That's something to actually think about a lot of the times.
Yeah. So there's a lot to this, and I'm not going to pretend like I'm an expert here, because I'm not a woman and I haven't had so many of those experiences, right? Being a straight white dude, right? So there's some things that like are just not in my experience. But in coaching multiple women, I've gained more insights and exposure to some of those things that are brought up by many of my clients. And that can look up the additional challenges that some women face in engineering and tech and or we'll just call it STEM fields or something if you want, are interesting from the perspective of not having role models that look like them in one way, but also in terms of some of them, I had a couple of clients actually that said that their worst or hardest bosses were actually other women, because they're like, this is how I had to deal with it. And so you have to do it too, which I was really surprised by, instead of having other women who were trying to be positive, supportive models for them, they were trying to make it harder on them as well. So I was surprised by that. And in addition to other clients that I had, they were dealing with harassment and other things too. Like, so it just some really difficult stuff. I would still go back to, let's acknowledge the realities and the additional challenges that we face. But absolutely, you know, mindset isn't some magical wand that you're going to wave and then suddenly things are better. But it does help you move through whatever that challenge that you're facing better than you otherwise would. Right?
Absolutely.
And you know, but for anyone with specific challenges that are difficult in any form or fashion, again, it's not an individual sport. Let's also find mentors and support structures in our work context and in our personal lives to help us move through all the different, you know, plates that we have to be spinning, and we're moving through those inflection points in our career to say, how are we going to do that, right? And the biases and other things that you have to face to be able to do that effectively and successfully.
Is there anything that you would like to plug or talk about? Any projects you have on going on, Jeff, or anything that you'd like to mention as we wrap up the interview?
Yeah, so I've got a couple of things in terms of if people are wanting to go deeper or talk about, you know, doing some work together. There's a few different options. So I have an intense one-on-one coaching. Also, you get some online resources and some group experiences called my Engineering Career Accelerator Program for people who are trying to make some sort of intentional career shift or upgrade. So people can reach out to me about that. Also, I'm just starting up a new mastermind program for people who maybe don't feel like they're quite ready for a one-on-one intensive, but also want to join a supportive community to help them continue to grow and connect and expand their network, as well as get some specialized training from me, a mastermind community there as well. So those are a couple of things that I'm doing on the one-on-one space, as well as I do kind of bespoke programs and training and workshops and speaking for organizations and teams who might say, hey, maybe we have individuals we might want to work with, but also how do we get aligned and intentional together? Because an individual can be as intentional as they want to, but then they get placed in an environment and like, hey, this may or may not support me and where I want to go. And all too often they're, you know, just those challenges that we face at work in a collective sphere. And so I do some of that work there. But in any case, people can find my main website, jeff-perry.com, or email me. I'm also pretty active on LinkedIn.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.